The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, we're practically Canadian. We take an in-depth look at Jeff Lemire, plus the doom that came to Gotham and stole our hearts. I'm just the kind who will break your heart. This is Super Skull. My name is Nick Wybar.
And this is Curtis Sullivan.
I am Marcus Schwarmer.
Let's do this. Let's talk about comics. How you guys doing? How's your bake?
Bake is good. It's hard on the outside and chewy on the inside.
That's good?
Yeah, that means good.
Okay.
That's what you want.
Yeah, bake is great. I'm using a diversity of spices that normally don't go together, but somehow they work.
That's the thing. You got to know how to mix.
So I started watching this show.
Yes!
I really like it.
It's Ooh, dramatic, good. Yet civil.
Yeah, I like a good cookie show. This is some top tier food porn.
Yeah,
this is the Great British Baking Show that we've been talking about incessantly for weeks.
Yeah,
yeah.
The setting makes the whole thing.
They're film it in a greenhouse or something.
Well, no, it's like a tent on a noble English estate.
Yeah, it's always pouring rain.
Yeah. Well, of course it's England. Yeah.
I enjoy it. It's
yeah.
a good show.
Yep.
Good,
yeah.
Good recommendo. You too.
Everyone should
Thank
watch
you.
It.
I'm rocking a little bit of a sore throat today.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys can hear it.
I'm just going to talk over you the whole time. It's fine.
I think that's for the best.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Curtis, your wife Liz told me that I have a delicate constitution. Do you guys think I have a delicate constitution?
You know, you're a little bit soft batch.
You think
yeah.
so?
I would say
he's rocking a 9 on the constitution.
On the 20-point scale.
Yeah, on a 20-point scale, 9 out of 20?
10 is average.
Wow.
That just means you're 1 point under average. That's not that bad.
It's just never something you want to hear.
Halfling.
Like when you're not feeling well and somebody says, like, you're never feeling well.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm not often sick.
I'm just saying halflings start with 8, so you're doing better than that.
Well, and here's the thing. I think,
are we doing a halfling comparison?
No, that wasn't a short joke. Right off the bat? No,
wow.
That wasn't a short joke.
No,
I was
dying. We are just getting going.
God,
this is the kind of show you want to have?
Sheesh.
Let's fucking do this, buddy.
Here's the thing, though. Your stellar intellect and your personality. You can't roll all, you know, 15s, 18s.
So true.
You know? So here's the thing.
So true.
Delicate constitution. Just it's tough to hear.
Would you rather have a high intelligence score or a high constitution score? Your choice, my friend.
Because you can't have both.
Can't have both.
That's a good point.
Apparently.
I guess I'll take the sore throat.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Super Skull is a weekly New Comic Day audio digest. Every week we talk about comics.
That's true.
Ostensibly. Mm-hmm. And baking shows.
Now.
Yeah.
For the foreseeable future.
I think we should do a recap every week of the most recent episode of The Great British Bake Off.
Ooh.
I love that idea.
Maybe it's a separate podcast.
Maybe.
Where we just talk about that show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a bad call.
Think about it.
I'm on it.
Just throwing it out there. But every week we each pick a book that we're really excited about.
That's true.
What was your pick, Curtis?
My pick this week was Batman. Shocker. Another week, another Batman comic by Curtis. This is a collection of The Doom That Came to Gotham. It's a graphic novel, actually. It's a collection of a 3-issue prestige format series that came out in the year 2000. And it's never been collected before.
Yeah.
So
I've heard legend of this book.
Yeah.
Is it made a big splash, and I hear you talk about it
mm-hmm.
from time to time, but
yeah.
it's never something, I could never check it out. It was never around.
So back issues are a huge pain in the ass. It took me a couple of years to put together just the 3-issue series.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever had them ever, and nobody knew what I was talking about. I'd go to comic shows, flip through boxes. Nobody ever has it or had it. And I checked eBay prices and internet prices a week or so ago. It's $100 on average.
For all 3 issues?
For all 3 issues. It was prestige format, so they were originally like $7.99, and prestige format, for those who don't know, is like a square-bound, kind of double-sized, thick comic.
And that's $7.99 in the year 2000,
yes.
So that's like $1,500 a piece.
Right.
Adjusted for inflation.
Correct. So very expensive on the back issue market, if you can find them.
Mm-hmm.
So finally collected, this is Mike Mignola, Richard Pace, and Troy Nixie. 3 total badasses. People know Mike Mignola from all his Hellboy stuff and BPRD stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about him all the time. He did a book called Joe Gollum a couple weeks ago that we really liked. You know, very Lovecraftian, very horror, very noir. Mixes a lot of lore and fable into all his stuff. For those who don't know, Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft, very, very famous horror novelist from the early 1900s.
Everybody knows H.P. Lovecraft.
They should. Yeah, and he's just infested the whole world. If you've done horror or written or done anything in the horror genre, you're familiar with this guy.
When was the resurgence of H.P. Lovecraft? Does anybody know? He's have
2000 and, like, I would say mid-2000s.
Something happened, and he just became, like...
Well, like, I think the internet got on the Cthulhu bandwagon, and
the internet,
from
internet
that,
discovered...
Well, there's Cthulhu games, I mean, going back for, you know, 20 years. Hellboy is 25 years old.
Yeah, but...
And that's all infused. Bunch of movies that are all Lovecraftian.
It's just, like, it's picking up steam.
Yeah.
And it's been a minute that it's been all Lovecraft all the time.
What was the Ian J. Colbert book that came out a while ago that was Lovecraft?
There's a ton.
He has adapted like three of his of H.P. Lovecraft's novels.
Yeah,
into
the
books.
Dream one. God, that was a good book.
The Dream of Unknown Kadath.
That was a great book.
It's incredible. And the Case of Charles Dexter Ward, and well, he just did a ton of them, and they're all stellar.
Yeah. He's infested comics.
Yeah,
Lovecraft has.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he should. He's just. It's so scary. I've only read some short stories from Lovecraft, but this book is based on a story called The Doom That Came to Sarnath, and it's about a guy who's lost at sea, and it starts off as your typical, like, I'm in a boat, I'm sailing with some guys, the ship goes down, he wakes up floating on some debris of the ship, and he's maybe, is he still on Earth? Where is he? And he floats for ever and sea, and he finally comes to this horrible island, and it's filled with, you know, weird barnacle-encrusted octopus demons, and it's crazy scary. And Lovecraft is scary in that way where he doesn't show and he barely tells, and that's where the fear comes from, just these very
the unknown.
It's very nuts.
That was really well put.
It was well put.
It was great.
Oh, thank you.
Don't stop.
I won't stop. So finally this book is collected, Back to the Doom That Came to Gotham, in a bound format, and it's so exciting that this exists. We can sell this to people. We can talk about it. This is a book we don't talk about at the comic store.
Yeah, it's because it came out and was and then disappeared.
Yeah, there's just no point. Hey, there's this really good book that you can't find that's $100 if
which
you can find it.
Which makes it scarier.
Yeah.
Because it's gone.
Exactly. So the cool thing about this book is this is an Elseworlds title from DC.
Well, hit me with the premise real quick.
Okay, so this is, what if Batman was an explorer and Gotham was founded, the way it's founded in core DC comics is like the big families of Gotham build the city. That's the Cobblepots and the Waynes. And what if they made a deal with an elder demon?
And that's what made the Gotham possible.
Yes, that's the birth of Gotham and how these families rose to power and prominence. And years later, of course, the demon wants his pound of flesh.
Yeah.
And things start to go bad and people die. And
we open on Bruce Wayne and he's sailing out in the Arctic.
In the Arctic, yep.
With some Robins. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's also got Alfred is on the ship with him.
Yeah, and he basically hasn't been back to Gotham in like 20 years.
20 years.
He's been gone.
Yep.
Like almost since from the time that his parents were killed, like he left, and now he's coming back to Gotham.
Interesting.
It was just so good.
I'm going to read it today.
I'd never read it. It was just so good.
I'm going to make some time to do
it. Yeah, and essentially, you know, he Mike Mignola does this great thing where all the Batman villains, all the stuff we know, the familiar Bat-verse stuff, is just Lovecrafted, just twisted.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Freeze has sold his soul in an arcane way and now can't live unless he's technically dead, but as long as he remains Sub-Zero, he can live.
Yeah.
It's super badass. The Killer Croc is a twisted Lovecraftian reptilian creature. Ra's al Ghul is also made a deal with, you know, Ugh-Shugoth, who's this ancient demon who's scratching. He's the lurker at the gates. He's scratching at the door of reality.
Yeah, the threshold of the consciousness.
It's super awesome. And the way they talk about madness, and that was a big Lovecraft thing too, is like everything is on the verge of insanity.
Yeah, you learn something and you know too much and you go insane.
It breaks your mind.
Big old Lovecraft theme, right?
Yep. So yeah, this book, even if you don't know Lovecraft, you're going to love it. It's a great alternate take on the founding of Gotham, on Batman. The ending is incredible. The artwork in this book is a guy named Troy Nixie. Unbelievably good artist. He did a book with Mike Mignola years ago called Jenny Finn, also a Lovecraftian scary harbor town thing.
What would you could you put his art into context a little bit? What would you compare his art to?
I'd put him in that Mike Mignola zone.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely detailed but exaggerated. Mm-hmm. Heavy inks. You know, the coloring on this book is Dave Stewart, I should mention, who's our
finest.
Yeah, it's one of our other favorite colorists of all time. Dave Stewart has colored just all the best books. Tons of Mike Mignola Hellboy books, but also Conan and a million other comics for decades. His coloring on this book brings Troy Nixie's really heavy inks to life. There's some bright, crazy colors. All the creatures are nuts.
So Doom that came book. To Gotham is it's technically what you call an Elseworlds book.
An Elseworlds book,
what
yeah.
What does that mean?
All right, so we went down the internet a little bit on Elseworlds. So there's three kind of stories in DC that they talk about. So you have continuity, which we always talk about on the show, which is, you know, for 75 years, every Batman story that's in continuity is all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And all across every book, all of it is one big, giant narrative somehow.
All these people live in the same universe.
Yep.
Their stories impact each other. It's all one world.
It's all interconnected.
That's continuity.
That's continuity proper.
Or real,
real,
quote unquote.
That's right, real comics. There's another distinction that DC used for years called imaginary stories,
mm-hmm.
which are totally fake. So in an imaginary story, it might be revealed to be a dream or some sort of other drug-induced something, but they're totally fake. And so that'd be a comic where they'd tell a story, it never happened.
I love this.
Yeah.
In these, like, not only are these worlds fictional, but they're fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
But now we're making distinctions between real and fake.
Of course.
So that's can you give us an example of an imaginary world?
Yeah, so
that didn't happen.
Yeah, the first imaginary story that DC did was all the way back in 1942, and I thought this was really interesting that DC was already thinking of continuity in the year 1942.
I don't believe it.
I always assumed that this was more of a 1960s sort of a construct where we're like, we're going to start thinking about this more seriously. It's a big universe.
Yeah, I find this hard to believe already, but go on.
Well, they made a very clear distinction that this was an imaginary story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Lois Lane goes to see Superman, cartoon hero, in the movie theater. And it's super bizarre. It's like kind of fourth wall breaking.
Mm-hmm.
Story, and that was revealed to be totally fake.
Imaginary.
And then this third distinction that DC uses is called Elseworlds. So Elseworlds is totally real, just like continuity books, but on a different Earth.
It's just a different reality or whatever.
Exactly.
And is that different? Is it part of the multiversity? Like, it's one of the other 52...
Well, that didn't always exist.
Right.
The idea of, like, the multiverse and, like,
yep.
you know... They didn't have it as segmented. It was just, this is happening, but on a different Earth.
Different plane of reality.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The multiverse stuff comes later.
Similar to that multiverse idea, right? So, I thought this was totally awesome that, yes.
And some other Elseworlds book. And this, what you would call Elseworlds.
This is Elseworlds.
And so, another example of that would be, like, your Kingdom Come.
Kingdom Come is an Elseworlds title.
Maybe the comic I've read more than any other comic.
Yeah.
Red Sun.
Superman
right.
Red Sun, also Elseworlds.
Not imaginary.
Nope.
Elseworlds.
Totally real.
On some different planet Earth that happened.
That's right.
And Nick, you made a comment this morning that you wouldn't mind if all comics were Elseworlds.
So this is... I have a pick this week, but all I really want to do is talk about this.
Yeah.
Because this just got my brain turning so much.
Well, let's dive into it.
So if every single comic... I don't care about these distinctions at all. I mean, I think it's fun, you know?
Absolutely. Right.
The continuity thing, the imaginary Elseworlds thing. And I've talked about this before. I've gone on and on about this before.
You have.
I think continuity is like maybe bad for comics.
Interesting, because I would very much like to hear your opinion on it.
So, and that's not to say that I don't enjoy the continuity and I don't like, I enjoy the stories that come out of it
right.
or whatever. But I think from a writing standpoint, it puts you right in a corner. And on a long enough time scale, that's why they have to do these big reset buttons every few years because
yep.
you have dozens of writers trying to write a cohesive universe, and it just actually doesn't make any sense.
But it just feels like these are a lot of unnecessary constraints, right?
Yeah.
So you want to be creative, you want to do this cool stuff.
Yeah.
Ah, crap, I can't do that. I can't write
the story that I want to write because I am bound by this event that's happening or by this thing that editorial says is going to link into this other thing. Sorry, go ahead, Marcus.
But don't you think one of the cool things about comic books and the fact that we have continuity is that they can introduce a character and then, you know, X amount of years down the road, a new writer can say like, hey, I thought that character had more coming, and then bring that character back and you get that cool like, oh shit, this is what happened, because you have the continuity to build on to allow yourself to kind of create those moments.
So I think that that's just as, I think you just do that because you like the character. And you just like pull them into the story that you want to tell because it works for the story that you want to tell.
Yeah.
Instead of shoehorning that character in, it's been X number of years, we all have to just collectively agree that either a certain amount of time has passed or no time has passed, and we have to all collectively agree that we know about the experiences that that person has been up to this whole time. It just doesn't actually work on the time scale, on the way that characters age and that people change. I think there's like this slavery to continuity that I think comics suffer. As a whole, we suffer from continuity.
I agree.
I think.
You know, and maybe the answer is right. Do the whole continuity thing, but do more Elseworlds.
Do more Elseworlds.
You know, if somebody wants a good Batman book, I would give them this book.
Yeah.
You don't need to know jack squat.
Just dive right in.
Here it is. And it's all done. It's nice, neat. It's one book. You get right in. There's a plenty of exposition, which normally is not my number one way to do it. It's so well written that you just love reading.
So if I had
the exposition,
if I had my druthers, every single Batman story would be an Elseworlds story.
Yeah,
and Scott Snyder's run right now is going to be 60 issues long. Like, we don't know.
Right.
What are we at right now? 40 some issues.
Yep, 40
something like that. And it's wonderful.
Yeah,
and I'm loving it. And just make it as long as it has to be and let it breathe as like you just
fine.
Let,
100
let the
issues,
writer
whatever it is.
Do their thing. And when he's done telling that story, that story is complete, and then somebody else takes it over. And I don't care if we pay attention at all to what Scott Snyder did. You can just tell these really interesting stories and play with the format and play with the characters. It's taking, so we have this book opens up, and the Penguin is wandering around the Arctic, like, naked. And we don't know what he's doing up there, and we don't know what his deal is. But we all know who the Penguin is. Everybody knows who the Penguin is. Everybody knows how Bruce Wayne's parents got killed, right? We don't need to, like, rehash that and re-deal with that. Just dive right in.
Yeah.
And do a twist on it.
You don't even need to, you could not know who the Penguin is, too.
Absolutely.
And that's the flip. If you do, it's I think all of the little nods and winks are killer if you're a Bat fan.
Yeah.
But if you're not, doesn't matter. Yeah.
It doesn't suffer from it at all. Marcus, what do you think? You got your brain turning.
Yeah, I think continuity brings some cool things to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the cool things about comics is we have a lot of different stories going on by a lot of different writers, but because they're all interconnected, comics is one of the only forms of media where something can happen in a Wonder Woman book that affects the Batman book. And maybe you don't need to know about it because you're only reading Batman, but if you are understanding the two things, that's very, very rich and very cool. No television series are as connected as comic books.
Yep.
No literature series are as connected as comic books. Nothing has the wide storytelling ability that comics have. And with continuity, you have the ability to have story arcs spread across multiple stories at the same time. And that is really cool and really big.
So when it's done well, it's brilliant.
It's super good.
And it can bend your brain around.
Yeah.
But when it's not done well, then you're actually missing a piece of the story because you're not reading another book, and then you have to go buy that other book.
I agree.
So I would love everything you're saying if it wasn't for the fact that like it all seems like such a cash grab. If the biggest thing about continuity is that it allows publishers to say, if you want the full story, you got to buy more books.
Yep. If it's done for that reason, I agree.
And yeah, no matter what the reason is, if I'm missing a part of the story because I didn't buy another comic book, that's inherently, just from a story perspective, that's inherently flawed.
I agree. But I think it has been done well, and it can be done well. And when that happens, that's one of the biggest positives comics have, is that they're building this gigantic world, and they have the amount of literature to do it and do it really well. And when that happens, it's something that's totally unique to comic books.
Yeah, the more comics I read, I just want small stories.
Just it totally depends, right? Because like Secret Wars like flies right in the face of that, right?
But it is Secret Wars is a perfect example because it just stands on its own.
It does, but it's a great example of if you dig deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought all the peripheral stuff that I read, and I read a huge amount of it.
Mm-hmm.
It all really works very well together.
Yeah.
But it was compartmentalized in a way where you could pick and choose.
Yep.
And that's incredibly hard to do. I don't even know how Marvel. I think that's the best example of a giant kind
it
of continuity crossover thing that worked.
Yeah.
You could pop in where you wanted.
But it was contained in its own.
It was.
Its own
you
thing.
Could just read Secret Wars.
Even if you just had Secret Wars, then you have mm-hmm. all the Secret Wars titles.
Yeah.
Those are all contained into this one, you know, macro event.
Sure.
But it's not the whole of the Marvel Universe
yeah.
going forward. It was two or three issues of each thing, right?
But just what kind of pops into my mind is, like, right now Captain America Steve Rogers is Old Man Cap, and you and I are really enjoying that.
Yeah.
And you can pick up a book and just be like, oh, Steve Rogers is old right now. That's really weird. But if you dig into it and you read the different series that he's in, his character becomes so much more fleshed out. And it would be odd to me to have three or four different Caps. You would have, like, Sam Wilson Cap, Old Cap, and Young Cap all doing the same thing at the same time. The only reason it gets away with Captain America White right now is because it is kind of in its own Elseworld, its own time period that's disconnected from the book series.
Mm-hmm.
But because we live in this giant Marvel universe that's all connected, if you choose to go deeper on this character of old Steve Rogers, it becomes only richer and only better, and there's no other media that can do that.
I think it would be just as effective if we just had a cool book that was about old Captain America, and you just walk in and you're like, yep, he's old. And here's his story.
I hear what both of you dudes are saying,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with both of you dudes. I'd love me some continuity, you know. But also, I don't see why half or more of comics aren't so self-contained.
Give me more of this.
Little
doodads. Is what I'm saying.
I totally agree. If there was like six books on each publisher that were in the same continuity, and maybe you had different continuities. Maybe you had two or three running, but they were all like 5 to 6 books.
Yeah.
That is very appealing.
And maybe you wove them a little tighter
yep.
together. Because that's the other thing is, it doesn't take much for the narrative of these, if you really start looking at them, to fall apart.
I totally agree with you.
Yep.
You don't have to spend much time at all trying to like actually piece together who's supposed to be. What was there was a time when Wolverine was in every goddamn Marvel book
yeah.
on the planet, and they kept making jokes about it.
Sure.
It was like literally, you're in 15 places at
yeah.
once with this dude.
You're on 5 super teams, Wolverine.
And then there's this like really weirdly earnest thing like, no, it's all real. It's all in the same
uh-huh.
universe. Like, why? Yeah. Just fucking, who cares? Let him be everywhere because it's all fake and just tell a good story.
Yep.
But, you know, like from a reader's perspective, too, the amount of, like, let's go back to Batman because we're talking about Batman the Doom that came to Gotham.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, that, like you say, it could be a long run
because mm-hmm.
people buy that Volume 1 Batman Scott Snyder run Court of Owls, and immediately if they read it, they're, give me Volume 2.
Yeah.
You know?
Have
so,
a long run.
Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't
exactly.
have to be contained like this.
It
was
so,
a great pick, Curtis.
Yeah, I'm in love with it. A couple other fun facts really quick, and then we'll get off of this trip, is Alan Moore's Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow was the last DC comic to use the Imaginary Stories name. So this is a killer story, you guys. There's a collection called Alan Moore's, you know, Best of DC, and it's all these short stories that he did. This is Lex Luthor and Brainiac teaming up against Superman?
Yeah.
Lex Luthor, oh my God, it's incredible little short story by Alan Moore. That was the last title. That was in 1986. So no more imaginary stories, you guys, in DC.
Yeah.
You barely have Elseworlds, and then you have continuity. So the first Elseworlds comic I also wanted to bring up was another Batman book, Gotham by Gaslight.
That was a good,
that was a
incredible
good
book. Also Mike Mignola drawing that one. That's a Jack the Ripper Batman story. It's incredible.
It was really good.
So, that is Batman, The Doom That Came to Gotham. That's one volume, one and done. It is out now, first time collected in 15 years.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Highly recommend
that's
it.
That's my big pick.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Pick. I wrote off of your I was riding your big pick. So.
You're such a pick writer.
So, oh, Jesus Christ.
So I'm going to talk about Superman American Alien number 2.
Oh, do it.
Just very briefly.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Superman as it. So this is young Clark Kent. Before he's Superman, he's figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have all of his powers. This is probably like an Elseworlds thing.
It feels like it could be.
Right? Maybe.
It doesn't say that anywhere. Where? But
yeah.
It's new territory.
Yeah.
So.
He doesn't have, like I said, he doesn't have all of his abilities. He's getting his butt kicked a little bit. He doesn't know kind of how he fits into the world. The town is like kind of aware that there's something, the town of, what did we call it? Tiny Town?
Yeah. It's Smallville.
Smallville. Thank you. That they're aware that there's something up with Clark Kent, but nobody quite knows what it is. And he's kind of experimenting with doing good.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. This series has been good.
So that's these are a series of one shots, even though it's a 8-issue series.
It's a 7-issue series, and it's you just read this one.
Yeah,
I mean read the first one because it was good. But
did you read Huck number 2 this week?
Nope.
They are almost identical.
I know. That's because yeah.
Anyways, so this is Max Landis writing this bad boy.
Max Landis on the writing, Tommy Lee Edwards doing the art.
Tommy Lee Edwards is a dope artist. The guy can draw real good. I like
it. He's got kind of like a Lee Bermejo thing going on.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, Superman American Alien number 2. Did you guys read it? What'd you think?
I loved it.
I haven't read it yet, but number 1 was dupe, and I will be reading it.
Cool. And I just want to throw out there, there's a new issue of Spire out this week.
New issue or a new printing?
There's a
both.
Well, both. There's
oh,
a
nice.
New printing of Spire number 1, so if you haven't read it, get your shit together. And there's issue number 5 comes out. It's the best comic that nobody's reading.
Well, and Nick won't judge you if you get it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the window's closing on me judging you for not reading Spire. Time is running out. I asked Curtis to order. I was like, Curtis, I love Spire number 1.
Yeah.
They're doing a second printing. Order 10 copies of Spire number 1 for me.
Yeah, and I did.
You know what he ordered?
Hmm.
6 copies.
Oh, I ordered 6.
It was like a direct measure of his trust for me. He has 40%
trust.
Well,
you know, it cuts both ways because, you know, the reorder came in and Nick's like, I thought I asked you to order some copies of Spire number 1, dude. I was like, I did. It's not out yet.
Where is it?
You didn't order those. So, you know, it cuts both ways.
6 out of 10.
You know, I'm a professional, Nick.
That's your grade for me.
It has nothing to do with you, Nick. Nick, I give you an 11 out of 10. You go to 11, my friend. Your constitution might be a 9.
God
but
damn it.
But in every other way, you go to 11. And look, I just know.
1 point above average.
I looked at the cycle data. I am confident that we will sell 5 of the 6, and we will eat that 6th copy.
We're going to sell all of them.
All right.
And you and I are going to talk about it.
Okay, I hope so.
Marcus?
I have 2 picks, and I'm going to do them just lickety-split here. Marvel put out Starbrand in Nightmask number 1, and I thoroughly enjoyed this comic book. It's about 2 young-ish superheroes, and they're both kind of larger in life. They're the defenders of the cosmic universe.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, they're awesome. And they decide that they need to reconnect with Earthlings.
These are Universe X characters, if I'm remembering?
I certainly have no idea.
What the fuck is Universe
Let's
X?
Let's not get into it. Yeah. It's a Marvel Universe thing. You know, anyways, moving
this
on.
Continuity bullshit.
Yeah,
yeah, it's in continuity, though. It's not an imaginary story.
Oh, thank God.
Nor an Elseworlds.
Please continue, Marcus.
But so they've been out in the cosmic fighting for a while, and they come back to Earth, and no one really knows who they are, but they have some superpowers, and they decide that if they're going to protect Earth, they need to, like, understand Earthlings a little bit better. So they
good luck with that.
They do what any good superhero does, and they go to college, which seems to be a trend in the Marvel Universe.
Do they get an apartment?
They don't. They have a dorm room.
Nice.
And
nice.
So we see some familiar characters. They're in the same college, continuity, which I think is really interesting. They're in the same college as Squirrel Girl.
I love that. She's there, too.
Squirrel Girl. And I just thought this book was a ton of fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but it was like a fun, light, quick-paced adventure story. And I think it's interesting. The 2 characters are really different from one another. And so Starbrand's kind of young and brash, and he's been around forever. He's lived for just ever, and he's seen all the things, and he's tried to connect with Earthlings before.
So he's like young, but he's like ancient.
He just doesn't age at the typical rate,
if you will.
And Nightmask is quite the opposite. He's like born out of something that happens in Secret Wars, and he hasn't been around very long, so he doesn't know much about Earth.
Got it.
And they're going to go to college and figure it out. Really fun. It had a lot of notes of Squirrel Girl in it, but isn't quite as goofball, a little bit more traditional superhero story.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to put this in the All Ages section. I think it's a great comic for someone who maybe is wanting to get into comic books and likes kind of the traditional superhero story. Their dynamic with one another is really interesting. And
They're like the bosom buddies.
Yeah, they're
like perfect strangers.
Ooh,
they're
I love
bros.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. One's very fastidious. It's an odd couple.
Yeah, it's,
I love
exactly.
That.
And I thought it was a blast. I really liked it. And I wonder if they're going to move into the Squirrel Girl book as well. I think that would be really
cool. I'm totally cool with that. I almost ordered barely none of these, but then me and Charlie Tucker were doing our monthly orders together. Charlie Tucker, manager extraordinaire of Vault of Midnight Grand Rapids. And she was like, Curtis, this book looks really dope. We should pay more attention to it. And then I did. I looked into it, and I was like, okay, Charlie, you're probably right.
Yeah, great book.
So,
Marcus, you have 3 minutes. What's your other pick?
Right. The other one is IDW put out a new Judge Dredd series this week, Judge Dredd number one. I like Judge Dredd quite a bit as a character, but he suffers from a lot of his books are almost exactly the same. Rogue cop in a city that's full of crime and only Judge Dredd can solve the thing. That's a lot of Judge Dredd. This book is super interesting. It starts out, Dredd wakes up. And he's in a place that he totally has no idea where he's at. And it's like a very wilderness landscape, which is not a scene that we see Dredd in quite often.
He's always in
like
Mega
never.
City 1.
He's always in Mega City 1.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a very like primal place. And he's just trying to figure out what's going on. But he's still Dredd. And I love that they did that. He's, you know, I'm still a cop. I still need to solve crime and fix things. And he does it in a super badass way. This was a ton of fun. I loved it.
I also enjoyed it. I think Judge Dredd is one of my favorite characters ever.
Really?
And
why?
Oh, my goodness. It's when it's done right, the 2000 AD stuff, there is a wit and a satire, this violent kind of satire of modern life. And a lot of it is you know, directed sort of at American consumerism and this kind of background fuzz. And, you know, the idea of this character as a judge is every crime is immediately, he's the judge, jury, executioner, slash sentencer. So, you know, and it's super funny. I mean, if you're loitering on a, you know, on a park bench, you know, get up now or 3 years in the ISO cube.
Right.
Which is an isolation cube.
Mm-hmm.
It's super funny and dark. I love the humor of it. I love the absolute will of Judge Dredd. He'll just shoot you in the face. The second you break the law,
he knows the law.
You're dead meat. He knows the law inside and out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He knows every single instance when he's allowed to shoot you in the face.
Yep.
He's
Which
got
is
all
almost
of those
always.
Memorized.
Yeah. No, it's the best.
But what I think is really great and fresh about this book is they've taken that character that we all know and they've put him in a situation that we've never seen him in before.
Yep. It's pretty weird. Yeah,
and it's
different.
Really well written and the art is amazing. And if you've ever had any interest in Judge Dredd, I highly recommend you pick up this IDW number one.
It's shaken up the formula, and I like that a lot.
I do, too, because I personally felt like the last couple Dredd things I read were a little the same.
So now those are American Judge Dredd. So this is interesting. IDW is the first American company that's been allowed to do Dredd. Everything else we've seen in the U.S., other than a few little exceptions, he teamed up with Batman at one point, Batman Judge Dredd crossover, which was dope way back in the day. But all of it has been 2000 AD stuff in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all these titans of comics. It's your Grant Morrisons. It's your Mark Millar did a terrible Judge Dredd run. Nick, you'll
yes,
be happy
did.
To know. But this guy named Alan Grant and Carlos Equizera, they're all 2000 AD artists and writers. Their shit, the 2000 AD stuff, especially the first, 15 years, is consistently holy shit good. That said, the IDW stuff, you know, it's trying to get its... There's some good stuff there.
Very
and
cool.
I really like this first issue, so... Yeah,
Marcus, what were your picks again?
It was Judge Dredd number one from IDW and Starbrand and Nightmass number one from Marvel Comics.
What's dope.
What's the one book that you're looking forward to reading that you haven't read yet?
Man, the Silk Run has been dynamite. The rebranding of it. Number one was really, really great. Number two is out this week.
Yeah.
And it's probably my favorite Spider book right now.
Very good.
Nice.
Those are our big picks. Starbrand and Night Flask. What's his name?
Night Mask.
Starbrand and Night Mask, number one. Judge Dredd, number one. The Doom That Came to Gotham collection. And Superman, American Alien, number two.
Yes.
Those are all the big picks.
Yep.
Are you guys ready for the next segment of the podcast?
Yeah, what is it? I'm not sure what it is.
It's called Untitled.
Oh, yeah.
It's a continuation of the thing that we did last week for the first time ever.
Oh.
This is the second time ever.
Right.
Where we're going to just go down the rabbit hole a little bit on a book that's coming out this week, something that we've found interesting. The name of this segment is Deep Picks.
I love Deep Picks.
What's Up Your Butt?
No, I don't like that one.
You don't want to use that one?
No, thank you.
Actually, it's written as What's Up Your Ass.
Oh, we'll say that then.
Okay. In a good way.
Ooh. We got a deep. This pick is deep this week, y'all.
Jeff Lemire has a new issue of Descender out this week.
He does.
Descender number 8.
Uh-huh.
Did anybody read it?
I did.
Did you enjoy it?
It was substantially good. We're 2 issues into the second arc of Descender.
So this is like a big-ass sci-fi space opera.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. Big universe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these different factions and planets and actors in this world. The scope of it is just really huge. Very narrowly focused on the characters,
yes,
of the book. But the background is just like massive in scope.
Yeah, the jump off, right, is a future. There's a huge intergalactic organization of planets and races, and it's huge. Humans are out in the stars, and we're mining planets.
Yeah.
These giant machines called the Harvesters that are bigger than worlds come and almost destroy the UGC, United Galactic Coalition, mm-hmm. I think it's called. And so there's a huge backlash. AI is abandoned. Robots are destroyed. This and all that said, right, that's all huge, and this happens across the universe, and mm-hmm. it's a massive event. But this story focuses on Tim 21, a young robot
little boy droid.
Yeah, who's on a
little
far
boyd.
yeah, that's, I think that's what they call him, a boyd.
So that got us thinking about Jeff Lemire.
Yes.
So Jeff Lemire is one of our favorite creators, and this new Descender book is just the latest in a really long line of stuff. He's just been on fire for a long
yes.
time, especially his creator-owned stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is on his own level. So we started thinking about Jeff Lemire and what he's been up to and what took him to this point. And the more we looked into him, he has a really interesting and crazy career.
It's excellent. It's the perfect trajectory.
Yeah. So Jeff Lemire, born in Essex County, Ontario. He's Canadian.
He is.
Yeah, we're not gonna make any jokes about Canada, though.
We can't, because I started looking into who else is from Canada that does comic books,
mm-hmm.
and it's everybody who's our favorite people.
So we're surrounded?
It's like
yes.
their education system gives a shit about the arts.
We're basically in there. Canada, so I always had to remember this. Like, don't make fun of Canada. We're in Michigan. We're basically in Canada.
We're 5 minutes
we
from Canada.
We are, like, structurally and functionally fucking Canadian.
I don't disagree.
I don't like it, but that's where we're at.
I love flat ham.
I'm not going to make fun of Canadians anymore. It's too easy. I love flat ham. So what are the theme? What when you think Jeff Lemire,
uh-huh.
what do you think of?
Sweet Tooth.
Well, like, are there themes, or are there, like, what's the vibe that he puts off?
Yeah.
What makes him different from other writers?
He's one of the best character writers in the game.
What do you mean by that?
He will take a character and flesh them out with mm-hmm. ease and make it totally believable. And let you know their positives and their negatives, and get you into their mindset of how they view the world and what their life is like better than almost any other writer.
So there seems like there's a couple of things that we see a lot in his work.
True.
And I don't mean these are like tropes or things that he's leaning on, because they're really broad and they deserve kind of exploration.
Yeah.
So he has a lot of stuff about family, and whether that's like your adopted family that you make, or you know, your relationship to the people that are actually related to you. There's these in Sweet Tooth. It's basically the story of this dude Jeopard and the boy Sweet Tooth.
Yes.
What's that kid's name in Sweet Tooth?
I always forget. He has a real name.
He does have a real name. Mm-hmm. I just call him Sweet Tooth.
Yeah.
And it's about them forging a father-son relationship. That's like the right. That's the trajectory of the whole book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's about them. It's about him finding, you know, Jeopard finding the son that he wants, and Sweet Tooth finding the dad that he wants.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, in Descender's the same way, right? They set up this giant world, and you could get into all the nuts and bolts of this giant galaxy, or Sweet Tooth, which is sort of a apocalyptic pandemic thing.
Yep.
But that's all backdrop.
Yep.
And the camera's very pulled in and focused on the lead character or characters.
Yeah, Descender is very much about, you know, this little droid wants a family.
Yep.
He has he was a gift to a little boy who he thinks of as his brother, and the little boy's parents he thinks of as the droid's parents.
Mm-hmm.
Gus is the kid from Sweet Tooth.
Yes.
It just came to me.
Wow.
Through the magic of radio.
Nice.
So family is a big thing in all of his books. Isolation, the more I thought about it. A lot of his books are about being alone in the world.
Sure.
So Lost Dogs. What's the premise of Lost Dogs? Have you read that recently?
I sure have. Oh, so that's about a family
mm-hmm.
who lives in the country. The father's this really big guy, and so people naturally assume that he's slow.
Right.
And it, you know, it takes place in, like, maybe, you know, it's 1800s or something. Then they go into the big city, and they're just not equipped to deal with the kind of the shitty reality of the dark and gritty city.
Yeah, and
in
they,
that time.
And so they are isolated in themselves mm-hmm. from this kind of city that's around them. Underwater Welder is Jeff Lemire's graphic novel that came out last year, a couple years ago. A
couple years, yep.
And it's about a man who, like, that's his job, is he goes underwater and he fixes, like, conduit and pipeline underwater.
Yeah.
All by himself. And he's faced with some really big choices in his life, and he's alone in the water, in the ocean.
Yep.
Thinking about his problems.
Yep.
You know, Sweet Tooth is largely about, you know, it's the apocalypse. And a lot
sure.
of his characters are just completely alone in the world. This is a lot of his work. The more I think about it, there's this sense of kind of loneliness and isolation and the desolation.
Yeah, and I don't even think that it's like a from a sad point either, right? You know, because Essex County, you know, is all these short stories about rural life in Canada. But, you know, the characters, they just have a different perspective.
Yep.
Because they have less interaction with people. They're, you know... the main character, or one of the main characters in Essex County, just lives out on a farm way out in
so that brings the boonies. Us to the third theme that comes up in his work a lot is the rural versus the urban.
Yeah.
Which I never realized until we started looking into this.
It's true.
A little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
He actually has a great quote. I kind of get sick of the stuff in New York, said Lemire. I love New York, but there are so many other stories. I wish other people would spend time telling where they came from. There's a really great Wall Street Journal interview that we'll link to in the show notes with Lemire, where he talks about this idea that, and you think about it, like almost all comics are set in the city.
Absolutely.
Sure.
That's where you fight crime. That's where you, you know, that the city's in danger, is in peril. You know, so much stuff happens in an urban environment.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking of a single superhero where the majority of their story takes place in the rural.
Right. Jeff Lemire's Animal Man. They're just like basically running through the countryside.
Sure.
They're like on the run, driving through
you know,
the country.
And that's probably why it's so good, because it's so honest. He has these experiences to draw from.
Yes.
You know? And so he's coming from a place of experience and knowledge, and then mixing in apocalypse or giant space robots or
yeah.
whatever else.
But that's really the unique thing that he brings to comics. He brings a lot of unique stuff
sure.
to comics. He's a phenomenal writer. But that perspective of the rural is such an interesting thing that you just don't see from almost anybody else.
Yep.
So in 2005, he won a Zarek grant for Lost Dogs, they were just talking about.
Yeah.
So Zarek grant is, they award you money. They're sadly defunct now, the
they
Zarek
are,
grants.
Unfortunately.
But some amazing creators have won these awards. And with that money, he published Lost Dogs.
Yeah,
it's
so
it's a self-publishing grant.
It is, yeah. So like thrice yearly or something like this, you would submit their works and you would, you know, get a grant if your stuff was deemed
yeah
grant worthy. So yeah.
So that was really kind of the beginning of his trajectory. He in 2009, he started working on Sweet Tooth. So that was the Nobody that he came out with, and Sweet Tooth. Oh, we're skipping Essex County, though. So Essex County was 2008.
Yes.
Right? And this is, speaking of all of these themes that we're talking about, you know, the rural family, it's about this small community and how they relate to just stories from Essex County. Right?
You know, so, and here's the cool thing, and you know, now that I think about it, so I just reread Essex County.
Yeah.
And the thing that struck me, again, was these small stories. But as you go, right, each story by itself is this little nice little vignette, a little moment. By the end of this book, the way that these stories stacked on top of each other
mm-hmm.
to create a much richer, deeper picture
yeah.
was awesome. And I think that translates into, he does that all the time.
Yes.
Where it's like you concentrate on these moments, and then he comes back to it in this way where it's not a direct reference. I don't know. He just has an interesting way of stacking these moments to build this massive thing.
Very small moments, and the way that he recalls them gives the whole thing a big, big depth.
Mm-hmm. And you don't really, it doesn't hit you until you get in there.
Absolutely.
And you're like, oh, I see. So
Essex yeah. County is really puts him on the map in a lot of ways.
And that book just came out in a deluxe edition, a hardcover?
It just came out in a really beautiful $150 hardcover
yeah. yep.
edition. So then The Nobody and Sweet Tooth come out in 2009, and then we're off to the races.
Sweet Tooth is definitely what made me recognize him
yeah.
as kind of like a mainstream comic reader at the time.
So what I thought was so striking about that is, so Jeff Lemire, we have this distinction for a really long time in comics between your comic book writers and your graphic novel writers.
Sure.
And, you know, we've talked a million times about those distinctions and why we don't like those words and blah, blah, blah. Who
yep.
cares? But you have your Jeffrey Browns, your Alison Bechdels, hit me with a million more, your Charles Burns.
Yep.
And these are your single author, artist, creators. And they are making big thinking graphic novels.
And they do their stuff.
Yes.
They don't do work for hire.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know, whatever, your Chris Wares, your
Adrian Tomine.
Just go yep. on and on and
absolutely.
On. We have a whole section of the store that's dedicated to these folks. So what was really interesting to me is, like, Jeff Lemire was one of those dudes to me.
Absolutely.
From the moment I heard his name and started writing his books, like, that is what I am, that's what I associate with Jeff Lemire.
He's indie, yeah. he's creator-owned, he doesn't do work for hire.
Exactly.
Yep.
So then he starts writing Sweet Tooth, which is a Vertigo book, and it's coming out every single month in single-issue form. I can't think of an instance that sticks out as much to me as that, in terms of a creator like shifting gears in that way.
You know, I agree with you, but I still didn't think it was the full switch, right?
No, absolutely.
Because it was Vertigo.
But even that in itself yeah. was weird.
Yep, absolutely.
Because it's serialized. It's a yep. monthly thing, and it came out on time every single month.
Mm-hmm. And he wrote and drew that thing, which is totally nuts.
It was full color.
Yep.
Super weird,
yep.
right? And I loved it, but I thought, oh, okay, this is what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost, I didn't realize how fast it was, but he starts writing for the big two in DC in specific, like almost immediately after Sweet Tooth starts coming out.
Yep.
So he started with a Brightest Day one shot, and then he's done like 19 different DC titles in the past
it's
5 years.
A ton.
Think yeah. about that.
Yep.
19 in the past 5 years. He's writing so many books at the same time.
He's writing considerably more books than a lot of writers who have been mainstream comic writers.
Sure.
What are the DC books that really launch him?
So Animal Man was his big
one. Right. That's mm-hmm.
This is your book. That's what it felt like anyway. Like, here's a character. It was the New 52 relaunch. We're
yep.
throwing a lot of stuff at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a Jeff Lemire book. Like, it was kind of scary and offbeat and, you know, again, very family focused.
I really liked it.
Love
it. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. It has a pretty dedicated fan following, that book.
Yeah, it was very, very good. And it wasn't his art, but it was kind of like it harkened back to his art. Who did the art on that original?
I might be making this up. I think it's Travel Foreman, but I might be making it up.
Sure.
But the art was incredible.
He's doing stuff for Valiant. He's got, and then just recently started doing a lot more Marvel work. All New, All Different Hawkeye is kind of his, which is a huge deal if you think about it.
It's pretty giant.
That Matt Fraction Hawkeye book is one of the biggest comics of the past 5 years.
And he has done I read all of the Matt Fraction run and was skeptical when All New Hawkeye came out.
Yeah.
To see how someone else would fit that style. And that book is definitely Jeff Lemire, but he knocks it out of the park. I mean, he kills it with that book. It understands the roots of where it's coming from with the Fraction run, and yet he's able to put his own style into it and make it seem like it's one continuing story.
Yeah.
And that, I had a big worry when he took over that book,
because
his writing style and Fraction's writing style, they share some links, but they are pretty different.
And those are big shoes to fill. I mean, stylistically, Hawkeye really stands out on the racks.
It's going to it changed the game up in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Hawkeye.
It does. And Fraction has a certain wit to his writing that I don't see a lot of other writers being able to copy well.
Mm-hmm.
And Lemire kind of left some of that wit out and just lets him do
his own,
thing. But it's a great run.
Yeah. What really kind of hit us about Jeff Lemire is just that strange swing from, you know, the artist, the creator-owned, kind of Zarek Award-winning graphic novelist, to company man in a lot of ways.
You know,
and I don't mean to say that, you know, as a pejorative. Like,
no.
He is doing big DC and Marvel books.
Well, and the thing too is he's still able to do creator works. You know, in the midst of all that DC stuff, he still popped out a beautiful book called Trillium.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and Sweet Tooth all the while.
Exactly. So it's the fact that he's both that he's somehow able to just be a really good comic writer and get jobs, you know, that's the dream. That's everything's working.
Yeah. Can you think of any other creators, you guys, that have this trajectory?
You know, there's one or two.
Gene Yang.
You know, Matt Kent.
Sure.
Gene Yang. Yeah. Matt Kent is definitely, I think, kind of somebody who was kind of, we watched at the same time as, you know, Jeff Lemire.
Neither one of them on the same scale, though.
No.
The sheer number of titles coming out every month with his name on it.
Yep. But, you know, remember when we saw Matt Kent get a Star Wars book?
Right.
You know, stuff like this?
Matt Kent is in the exact same boat.
Yeah, it was just wild.
Yeah.
And they deserve it. They're great writers, you know. So, and I know that's hard, right, as a creator, right? I can't ever picture, like, an Adrian Tomein doing anything but his own work.
Sure.
Like Chris Ware, there's no way, right? I mean, he's an incredibly talented guy, but they're so idiosyncratic that I don't think they work that way.
Whatever. I want an awesome Bechdel superhero book.
And
I'm not against it. I mean,
I
want to
see what it looks like.
Sure.
I want it to be in my life.
And this is what I would have said about Jeff Lemire. Like, I just can't imagine him writing Hawkeye.
Right.
He's writing Extraordinary X-Men right now. Like, Jeff Lemire's writing an X-Men book.
Yep.
Can I talk about the worry?
Yes.
Is that maybe he's doing too much, and maybe it's going to lose some of the flavor. So I will come out and say I think the Extraordinary X-Men run right now is entirely mediocre.
Yeah, I haven't been that into it.
I've read the issues that have come out. I don't think it has what I like about the Lemire style. And X-Men is one where you can do the family story so easy, and it works.
I think you just hit it on the head, is that I don't see a lot of Lemire in it.
Totally. It seems very run-of-the-mill, and it seems very mediocre. So my worry is that he becomes a company guy, and he starts putting out a ton of books, and he loses what makes him really, really good, because I'm not seeing the Jeff Lemire in Extraordinary X-Men.
I would say, though, it's not terrible, and it's the only minor chink in this guy's armor, right? Because Hawkeye's been a blast.
Yeah, I mean, he's written so much stuff. Some of it was just okay.
Sure.
There's no doubt about it. Future's End was okay.
It was totally okay.
Yeah.
Yep. He worked with like 20 million other writers and 50,000 editors on that. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's always a thing to consider, too, is editorial does have some demands.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
So if you're doing work for hire, they're going to say, we need this, this, and that.
I guess why
Here's
Extraordinary X-Men worries me so much is the X-Men are the perfect fit for Jeff Lemire. It's family-based. You can do isolation, and they travel all around. You can do whatever landscape you want with the X-Men. They're everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And yet this book is missing those things. And that is where the worry comes into for me.
Yeah, maybe, you know, Marvel has a vision. Who knows? But I agree with you. It's not as good as I wanted it to be. I had very high hopes for it.
Yeah. We should point out that Essex County is being developed for television.
Oh, yeah. They just announced that a day or two ago.
But for the Canadian Broadcasting Company.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Lemire's going to be an executive producer. And Descender has been was optioned before the first issue came out for a film.
By Sony Pictures.
Which is actually increasingly more common in comic books.
My favorite thing about that is even if they don't make it into a movie, traditionally an option deal is at least six figures. And just congratulations to Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, that's excellent. This guy can be a professional comic book writer, cartoonist for his living, and he should be.
So this was my big takeaway from this whole thing, is that I love the Jeff Lemire story because of what you just said, that an amazing writer can make a living writing comic books now and doing them in the weird way, or you know, that he or she writes.
Yeah, birthed into the world from their brain.
We're in a really crazy good time for comics right now. We all know it. We're in a weird age. And I think he is like a herald of it. His career is a trajectory of how good comics are right now.
Yep.
From when he comes on the scene to when he starts to get attention paid to him to when he starts to write seemingly every book on the planet. He's like a microcosm in and of himself of what's happening in the industry. And I think it's just so
absolutely
awesome.
And you feel like publishers are paying attention. The amount of people that you just, Kate Leth, you know, working at Marvel Comics on a mainstream book. I mean, there's so many examples. We could just keep listing off names. And people are paying attention. These are people who came out with their own stuff, their own unique voices and visions, and now they're shaping, you know, the big two. You know, and especially Marvel Comics.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
Any closing thoughts, gentlemen?
Just give something a look from this guy. You know, I guess if I had to pick my top two, it'd be Essex County, Don't Sleep on That Book, and Sweet Tooth. And if you want to get really sad and you want to see the birth of his career, do Lost Dogs.
Yeah.
That's a gut punch, and you can see the evolution of his style. It's very heavy inked, but it still looks like Jeff, but he's definitely progressed as an artist. But those are my three favorites. I even like Justice League Dark, you guys.
Which it was a
Jeff Lemire book. Mikhail Janin was the artist on that book.
It was a good book.
It was the first like dozen issues that he was on. I thought it was super on point. So, yeah.
Cool.
I love that guy. Yeah, check him out.
That's Jeff Lemire. That was our deep pig.
Down the rabbit hole.
Nice.
That was fun. That was fun to do.
It's good to talk about that, dude.
It was fun to learn.
I like that book. Essex County.
Yeah.
Why are you guys talking like that?
I like that book.
How are we talking?
What it's are like you talking about?
Automatons, maybe?
Let's scoot into the board game corner.
It's comfy today, the board game corner. We've redecorated.
It's cozy.
It's nice.
We put a rug down.
Found a leather chair in the alley.
Uh-huh.
It's great.
That rug really ties the room together,
thanks,
you guys.
Ma'am.
So our board game review this week is Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective.
What a game.
Walk me through it, Marcus.
So Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, you play as a group of kind of Sherlock Holmes information gatherers. They have a name.
He has a team of information gatherers?
Yeah, kind of his street gang, if you will.
Oh, the name is just on the
tip of my brain. Is it the Baker Street Boys?
It is.
The Baker Street Irregulars.
There it is.
Baker Street, yeah, you play as the Irregulars. And this game comes with a bunch of booklets that are little mysteries that Sherlock Holmes is solving and wants to see if you can help him out. And it comes with a map of England, Victorian England, and a directory, which is the coolest part of this game.
It comes phone book.
A phone book, essentially. And as you play through this game with your team of irregulars, you're jumping all around England trying to interview people and put the pieces of this puzzle together. And at the end, Sherlock Holmes asks you questions, and you see if you can answer them all, and you score to see how well you've done, to see if you've beaten Holmes.
Because he's already
cracked the case.
Aha!
In many ways, very similar to another one of the games we love this year, Time Stories.
In some ways.
In some ways, very similar. But this game is different also. So I'll say right off the bat, this game is very text-heavy.
So I'm a big fan of flavor text in a game.
And you got to read it out loud?
You have to read it out loud.
Ooh, I love this.
And there is so much flavor text, you guys.
Yeah.
It is nuts. So there's this long preamble of... You know, basically a little short story explaining what's happening in the case. This is what happened. These are the facts of the case as we understand them.
Nice.
And you're off to the races.
And then you just go.
Yeah.
And you think, well, that dude mentioned the French consulate. You guys want to go to the French consulate? Get the directory out. Okay, the French consulate's on this street. Let's go there. You go there. You look up in the mystery book. There's a paragraph under the French consulate. Or there's two pages listed under the French consulate.
Right.
And you have to read all of it and... God damn it, you better be paying attention, because there's going to be six red herrings and one real clue in there.
Oh. Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's very cool.
So when we were playing, it was myself, Nick, Rachel Polk, our producer, and Christian Silverice, employee of Ultimate Night, and Steve Fodale, co-owner.
Yes.
Oh, I heard you guys got Steve on the mix.
We did. And
nice.
I'm glad he was there, because his brain works in a different way than ours,
yeah.
And it was awesome. But, man, this game's super. It can be very intimidating. Because Nick would be reading the flavor text. Rachel Polk and I had to divvy up the note-taking. And so we're scribbling down notes, and Christian and Steve are just listening for clues to see where we want to go next.
Did you guys set this up beforehand? Like,
no.
We're going to take notes. You guys listen.
We just had to, like, as we went,
okay.
We were just like, and I think we could have improved on the formula a lot. So this is, like, we did it all cooperatively.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this competitively and see who figures out the mystery first.
Oh.
What a bear.
Or you can do team competition. You could like 2v2, and then whichever team figures it out together.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
I love the sound of it.
I had a good time.
You had a brilliant idea, which is that this game needs an app to go with it.
It needs a phone app. So my thought is, what would make this? Because this game won the Spiel des Jahres, the Board Game of the Year
award.
Yes,
in the
80s. Oh.
In the 80s, and now they've reprinted it.
Oh,
my thought
is,
let's bring it into the current. You go to the place, you click the location on your phone, and it reads the flavor text for you so you can focus on taking notes. I think
or just focus on listening.
In listening, right.
Because I
love that.
Burnt. I got so sick of my own stupid voice by the end of that.
We had to start rotating who was reading all the text. That being said, this game, like as far as the detective game genre goes, is a great one.
It's also right in the tone and theme of Sherlock Holmes.
Yep.
They nailed it.
Yeah. This game is awesome. I think it's a great party game. If you wanted to do like a murder mystery dinner, but maybe didn't want to follow that traditional format, this would be a great substitute.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's very free form. You don't have to know any rules, really.
Nope.
There's nothing to learn.
Oh.
You know, you just like, here's the mystery. Here's the flavor text. Did you solve the mystery?
You just open the box and go.
Literally 5 minutes and we were in it.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Which was great. Very different from Time Stories.
Yes.
In that case, Time Stories is very rule-based. This is much more free flow.
Yeah, I recommend it. I say get it.
I loved it. I want to play more of it. And I think now that we've gone through a little bit of it, we're ready to go and we can really figure it out. I've been thinking about, we didn't finish our game, but I've been thinking about it quite a bit.
I've still been thinking about it. I want to crack that case.
I want to crack that case.
And what's the full title of this game again?
Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective.
I love that name, Consulting Detective. Yeah. That's
Which
great.
Which is like Sherlock Holmes' title. It's like that's on his business card.
Right.
This game is super hot right now. We have more copies coming in. But I would, if you have any interest in this game, I would snag it quick. Because the last print run's done, and it seems like this print run is going fast.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
It's fun.
It's very fun.
Cool.
Yeah. That's Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective out of the Board Game Corner.
Get some bourbon or wine and crack that case.
Absolutely.
Nice.
That's going to do it for us today.
There we go.
Our producer and editor is Rachel Polk. Our music was created by A-Bomb. Check out his Bandcamp. Dude's really good at making music.
He's working on a new tune for us.
What?
He's working on a new intro for us.
Is that true?
Yep, totally true. I saw him at the 8-Ball, and he was like, hey, I think you guys might need a new intro. And I said, I think we'd be down. But he was like, cool, I'll work on it.
I was just going to ask him to make us a new intro.
He's on it.
That's
already.
How good he is.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Yeah. All of our art and design was created by Philip Wong. Hope he's working on new art and design for us, too. It's Christmas time. Give us the gift of new podcast shit.
Yeah.
Special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for the use of the Freedom Shrine Recording Studio.
As always, please subscribe to Super Skull on iTunes. Make sure you download that bad boy because that helps us out. Also, leave us a review because that helps other people find our podcast.
Sometimes
we
put things on Twitter and Instagram. You can check that out at the handle Super Skull Show. Also, please check out our website, superskullshow.com.
Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996 and podcasts. My name is Nick Weibar.
I'm Marcus Consulting Detective Schwimmer.
And I am Curtis Fuck That Sullivan.
And we wish you good reading. Until next week. Welcome to Super Skull, Vault Midnight's weekly podcast. Pleasure.
I can't do Australian.
It's a pleasure.
Kylie loves Flight of the Conchords, though. She's been working on her Australian accent like a motherfucker.
Well, it's New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Roger.
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
You're really going to end with, I'm Curtis, fuck that Sullivan?
That's hilarious.
I don't know. I, you know, it's,
I
just came out.
I think you should leave it.
Well, Nick says I should leave it, and he's smart.